Ahamameti swikit kritya griheshu kumatira grihi tadyo pramadaya dino viprayoga upastite. I, mama, mine, iti, thus, svikritya, accepting, griheshu, in the home, kumati, whose mind is full of obnoxious thoughts, grihi, the householder, Dadyao turns his attention to Pramadaya with his wife, Dina, very poor, Vipra-yoga, when separation, Upastite, occurred. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai. One more time. Srila Prabhupada ki. King Paranjan was overly attached to his family and conceptions of I and mine. Because he was overly attached to his wife, he was already quite poverty-stricken. At the time of separation, he became very sorry. Please repeat. King Paranjana was overly attached to his family and conceptions of I and mine. Because he was overly attached to his wife, he was already quite poverty-stricken. At the time of separation, he became very sorry. Purport. It is clear in this verse that at the time of death, thoughts of material enjoyment do not go away. This indicates that the living entity, the soul, is carried by the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego. To false ego, the living entity still wants to enjoy the material world, and for want of material enjoyment, he becomes sorry or sad. He still makes intellectual plans to further his existence. And therefore, although he gives up the gross body, he is carried by the subtle body to another gross body. The transmigration of the subtle body is never visible to material eyes. Therefore, when one gives up the gross body, we think that he is finished. Plans for material enjoyment are made by the subtle body, and the gross body is the instrument for enjoying those plants. Thus the gross body can be compared to the wife. For the wife is the agent for all kinds of sense gratification. Because of long association with the gross body, the living entity becomes very sad to be separated from it. The mental activity of the living entity obliges him to accept another gross body and continue his material existence. The Sanskrit word stri means expansion. Through the wife, one expands his various objects of attraction, sons, daughters, grandsons, and so on. Attachment to family members becomes very prominent at the time of death. One often sees that just before leaving his body, a man might call for his beloved son to give him charge of his wife and other paraphernalia. He may say, "My dear boy, I am being forced to leave. Please take charge of the family affairs." He speaks in this way and not even knowing his destination. So the verse again, Aham ameti svikritya viheshu kumatira grihi dadyo pramadaya dino viprayoga upastite. Translation, King Paranjan was overly attached to his family and conceptions of I and mine. Because he was overly attached to his wife, he was already quite poverty-stricken. At the time of separation, he became very sorry. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swayate Namane Namaste Sarasvatim Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskya Dhyade Satarane. Here it mentions that King Paranjana was overly attached to his wife and family. So it's not that all attachment is bad. If there was no attachment, we'd have a very difficult situation in the material world. If the mother was not attached to her child and said, all right, here you are, I've given you birth, now tate tisi tata kuru, now do what you like. That would not be very good for the child or for the future society. So some attachment has to be there. But ultimately we have to make plans to get out of all material attachment. So overly attached means that there is no plans whatsoever to get out of the Bali concept of life. Although we may have some romantic conception of the bodily concept of life, ultimately it says here, it produces misery. Tatsadamanye surya dayam dasamud vigna dhyama satkrihat hedvatma put. Oh, I actually got the wrong verse there. Tat, what, how does that verse go? By first one by Maharaj Yashavde before the Paravas Tava. No. Another one, where he says that asanapi klesha da asadeha nunam pramatta kurute vikarma. That's it. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yedendriya pritya aprinoti nisaramanye atmanoyam asanapi klesha da asadeha. In other words, right now, if we don't have any other experience besides this body, then there's no other objective of life than just eat nicely as possible, try to have a good sleep where we're not disturbed, try to have nice relationships with others, romantic or otherwise, and try to defend ourselves so that we're in less anxiety than we are already. If that's all we are, is the body and the mind, then there's nothing else to do. But if we're something other than the body and the mind, and if we're actually meant to be peaceful, happy, ecstatic, blissful, etc., then that's a worthwhile objective. Now, obviously, we're not it's not like you press a button and suddenly you're ecstatic. It would be nice if it was like that. When I went to college, I studied psychology, and they were claiming that they had some method. They knew where to put the probes into the brain of the rat and press the button, and the rat was in so-called ecstasy. Because the rat would spend his whole time without even eating, just pressing the pedal down that stimulated that certain area of the brain where he was supposedly ecstatic. So he'd eventually die from starvation because he wouldn't take the time to eat. Maybe the probe was reminding him of some movie he saw in his last lifetime that he liked, and therefore he was paying full attention to it. But anyhow, that's their claim, that there was some part of the human the brain where you can feel ecstasy all the time, and if you just find it and just press the button, then you'll be ecstatic. Good way to explain religious ecstasy, but it probably doesn't work. Otherwise, probably the scientists would have found that probe, that spot, put the probe there, and we would see all the scientists just pressing the pedal down all day long until they died also, made room for some intelligent people. In any case, there is a process of becoming happy, and the process is not to create an imitation spiritual world, which we already have done. In other words, we've come here because since time immemorial, we've made plans to create a world where we be either Narayan or Radha or Lakshmi. And we've been making plans, and they've been stored up within our consciousness, and we don't even know what they are anymore because there have been so many of them. We can go back in past life regressions to find out the billions of plans we've made, how to lord over the material world, but it can be summarized. We've just made plans to lord it over the material world, but how to do it? Well, we've not come here to become servants or even cowherd boys or even gopis. We've come here to become God, or at least to imitate God. And therefore, generally speaking, Radha and Krishna, taking their roles, is on the top of the list of imitations. And of course, because the material world is a perverted imitation of the spiritual world, other paraphernalia has to be there, such as Garudas or Chintamani palaces or whatever else. So we've made all, just like when the Krishna received a message from, what was the name of the imitation Krishna? Begins with P. Pundraka, yes, Pundraka. So Krishna went to fight against Pundraka, and Pundraka had two artificial, you know, arms. One of them had discs, another a club, whatever else. And he was dressed in yellow, and he had a shrivasa and a garland, etc., etc. But clearly it was an imitation. But he was very enthusiastic in his imitation. It's not that he thought, well, I'm a little embarrassed out here imitating Krishna, but I'll try and put on a good show. Maybe I'll get an Oscar or an Academy or something. No, he was quite enthusiastic about his imitation of Krishna, so much so he actually believed that he was Krishna. And his followers believed that also. Until his head got cut off and it wound up in Kashi, along with his friend Kasiraj. In any case, somehow or another, by the blessings of Krishna, Krishna has given us the ability to be very enthusiastic about our imitation of being Radha and Krishna. So much so, we're convinced that we actually have a chance to do it. Otherwise, the material world would be, no one would come here. Think, oh, what's the use? I'm going to think it's just an imitation play, and I'm going to know that actually I'm a spiritual soul and that I shouldn't be here. I'll feel guiltier all the time. No, by the illusory energy, we actually are thoroughly convinced we are this body and that we only have a few moments left, and we better grab them and try and pretend that we're Radha and Krishna for the few moments and be happy in that way. Of course, in Kali Yuga, the time goes so quick that there's hardly any chance to imitate because you can hardly pay off your house before you're dead, but to speak of other things. It's hard to think it's my Chintamani palace when the bank keeps on sending you a notice every year, we're going to kick you out if you don't pay. It's very hard to be God in Kali Yuga. Everyone's really disappointing you. In any case, we're so stubborn and determined that we do it anyhow. But luckily, because of the difficulty, sometimes there is some moment, a pause. Maybe it's not working the way I thought it was going to work. And then if we, somehow or another, during that pause, if we hear the holy name and we're able to listen, then we may realize that actually there's an alternative. There is something else that's possible other than imitating Radha and Krishna here. And if we're fortunate enough to listen with some submission and to experience some other level of experience, another level of awareness, where we feel some positive happiness, or at least peace, then we might develop some enthusiasm to try this out more seriously. Of course, That doesn't mean that our accumulated thoughts, because generally speaking, our reactions to our activities manifest themselves as our thoughts and feelings. They also manifest themselves as reactions, but if we have the proper attitude, we have the proper perspective on things, we won't get caught up so much with the reactions in terms of physically what we're going through externally. There's one thing, the externally what we're going through, that's caused by our past activities. But more subtle than that is our attitude towards what we're going through. That's caused also by our past activities. So obviously we're not going to change entirely our gross reactions, prarabdha karma, in the sense we just can't walk out of the body. People would like to think, well, I don't like my body, I'd like a new one. Well, we might like a new body, you know, with all the, that looks exactly like our favorite movie star, sings like our favorite singer, plays tennis like the world champion, whatever else we might think. Ultimately, we'd like to be Krishna, so. But we just like to add, like Hiranyakashipu, he asked for 100 benedictions. He kind of added them all together, hoping that it would work. But even we add our 100 benedictions, even we become, we look like our favorite movie star, even we jump like our favorite jumper or like a grasshopper or whatever. Even we add them all together, we're still not Krishna. Don't tell anyone that, they'll be very disappointed. Still we're thinking it'll be better than it is now, if we can do all those things. So those accumulated, and they manifest themselves as our present gross body. But obviously, in this gross body, most of us who are sane, and there may be still a few of us, are not thinking that, let me use this body and jump higher than the highest, become more famous than the most famous, more beautiful than the most beautiful. We realize there are limitations to this body. And if you haven't realized it, just grab your toes and try and put your trunk forward and see how far you get. You'll find out how limited you really are. Or just stand up and try and touch your toes. And unless you're 18 years old, you might find you don't touch them anymore. So the gross body is limited. But our subtle body, wow, that's where we can really fly around the universe. We, in our subtle body, we can imagine we're anything. And we have no one to disagree with us until someone wakes us up. Prabhu, you're sleeping. I'm not sleeping. I'm not sleeping at all. I'm in reality. You're the one who's asleep because you don't see who I really am deep inside. So in our subtle body, we can practically do anything. And that's why it's so difficult, because we have so many ideas. Even we can't do anything with our gross body, but we can make so many plans with our subtle body in the future what I'm going to be able to accomplish. Or even try to imagine that we're the enjoyers and controllers in this subtle body. Therefore, these have accumulated since time immemorial, all these feelings and desires, whatever else, anger, frustration, the fact that people have opposed me, and not allowed me to manifest my full potential. And what is my full potential? What am I thinking? They have this thing about full potential. What is it? Actually, I should be God, but I haven't realized my full potential. Therefore, how to get out of this unlimited desires when Arjuna said, my mind is a little uncontrolled. And Prahlad Maharaj said, my main problem is my mind. And you ask any devotee, they'll say, well, what's your problem? Ultimately, if they're truthful, they say, it's my mind. When I'm chanting japa, it's my mind. It's taking me everywhere. Well, even when we're not chanting japa, it's already taking us everywhere. Just when we're chanting japa, we just become aware of it, that's all. we get a little bit of out of the mode of ignorance so that we become a little aware of how my mind is driving my existence. Then, if one is a little bit conscious of his mind, Prahlad Maharaj said, there's no enemy except for the uncontrolled mind. It's not that our mind is ultimately our enemy, it's just that the mind left to itself, when it's uncontrolled, becomes our enemy because it drives us in all different directions and it doesn't really help us get to the real purpose of life, which is self-realization. Therefore, although Arjuna was so powerful externally, he was able to go to any planet, he fought against huge demons, were able to defeat even the demigods, but he said, I have a problem with my mind. What to speak of ourselves? So what did Krishna say? Oh, dear Arjuna, you know, I sympathize with you, but I have a problem with my mind too. What can I tell you? I mean, I'm God. You can imagine what I got to go through. No, he said, Asam shayama mahabaho manodu nigraham chalam abhya sena tukundiya vairagyena chagriyate. So Krishna recommended two things, suitable practice. Put the mind in something positive. There are things that are worthwhile to think about. And the other thing is become detached from the unnecessary things, the things that are just taking our energy away, that we don't really need. Just like the devotees don't smoke. Some people think that, what can I do without smoking? My life would be, you know, a failure. Other things also, people waste their time and anxiety over the things that are useless. And even so-called important things, ultimately, people don't really need. What people had nowadays, for instance, their television sets, their videos, their cars, their radios, their bank balance. People not so far back used to do without these things. All they had was fresh air, clean water, fresh food, nice relationships with people, comfortable life, and somehow or another they survived without all these things that are making people in anxiety. I mean, they didn't have the opportunity to watch people get smashed by cars and run over by, you know, tanks and shot to pieces. I mean, they didn't have all this opportunity for all this wonderful, elevating, enlivening information. But somehow or another, they survived in spite of being in primitive life with all this, as I said, nice relationships with people, where actually people knew who's living right next door to them. Imagine that, getting involved with people living next to you. How primitive. They even knew their names. Oh my God, how degrading. So we've created a civilization where people are imagining that they need things that are actually useless and detrimental to them. That without fluoride in the water, they get tooth decay. So let's drink fluoride. Fluoride, a deadly poison, even if you inhaled it next to where they're putting into the water, you die immediately. But we can't do without fluoride. And other things like that. So people are actually imagining that they need these things and working hard for them. On the other hand, if we find out what we really need, what we really want, then we can become peaceful, even if that for one moment, just imagine, if we, for one moment we were peaceful enough to not be in anxiety and we took that moment to hear about Krishna, what would happen? All my material plans since time immemorial would fall apart. My hair would fall out, whatever else. So that's the whole process of Krishna consciousness, just to spend a little time listening without anxiety, peacefully, accepting what Krishna has to offer us in, by his association, what Srimati Radharani has to offer us, what they're wanting to offer us. And that's called suitable practice. That is, accepting the opportunity to associate with Radha and Krishna simply by hearing their holy names submissively. with the right attitude. And whatever that right attitude may be, we may not know, but at least if we try to hear, then by hearing and getting their association, that right attitude will be revealed, and it's the finest submission. We'll actually understand what it means to be receptive. And our main obstacle is our minds. Our minds are full of anxiety, full of misconceptions, full of doubts, full of different things, and therefore we can't spend the time, or we don't spend the time, just listening. Try to soak in the holy name. Try to understand how to make our lives more peaceful, more productive spiritually. Not getting overly involved in things that just agitate our minds unnecessarily. Then at the time of death, if we practice like that, even in the midst of the great disturbance which comes from death, we won't worry about it because we'll be thinking about Krishna. We'll be chanting the holy name, thinking about Krishna, and if we reach the platform where the happiness is so great, we won't mind whatever disturbance. Prabhupada gave the example that just like on the ocean surface, there are so many waves, there is so many lightning going on in the clouds, the boats are rocking back and forth, but deep inside the ocean, everyone's quite peaceful and happy. Similarly, if we go deep into Krishna consciousness, we go deep into hearing and chanting, then that will solve all our misidentification with all the problems that are going on externally. We'll be able to remain peaceful in spite of them. It is not that necessarily we're going to change all the disturbances going on externally, but at least we won't be disturbed by them. We'll be able to become conscious that there's no reason for us to be disturbed. Now we're thinking there are so many reasons for us to be disturbed by what's going on externally, but when we become conscious of our relationship with Krishna and our spiritual identity, we won't be disturbed because we'll realize there's no reason to be disturbed. The only reason to be disturbed, Prahlad Maharaj said, was that we're seeing that so many people are disturbed unnecessarily, and therefore we want to make them happy and peaceful by giving them the realization of who they really are and what their relationship with Krishna is, so they can become happy and undisturbed in spite of all disturbances also. Unfortunately, modern society, Prahlad Maharaj said, is vimudhas. People who are not trying to become undisturbed, they're creating disturbance where there is no need for disturbance. They've created a civilization where they just create things out of nothing. The whole economics system is just to create things out of nothing. They create paper out of nothing and they call it money. A few people with a printing press can just create, most people have to work for their money. But some people have a printing press and they just print it up and they take as much money as they want and give it to their friends. Other people create, these systems where there's credit. Out of nothing they create money and then they loan it to people at interest. And people say, well, that's very good. I wish I could do that. And then it's crazy system. The whole thing is more or less madness, but since we're part of it, we can't change it. At least we should understand that I'm a servant of Krishna, and during this madness, I should go and try to make people aware of what they can actually do. There's a sphere of influence, and there's a sphere of concern. If one tried to analyze how mad Kali Yuga is, if one spend one's whole time doing it, one will simply become mad also, or angry at the people who are doing it. But that's in our sphere of concern. But our sphere of influence means we can change our consciousness, and therefore we can become happy and peaceful. And by doing that, we won't get so much involved in Kali Yuga, and therefore we won't cause more unnecessary problems for ourselves than is necessary, and problems for others. And we'll make progress towards spiritual awareness. So we'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Moment of silence. Praying for all the disturbed people in Kali Yuga. Yes. You mean, so what should we do? Go out and try and... Yeah, well, they've been saying that. I mean, part of Kali Yuga is to put everyone in fear all the time. I mean, the religious people do that too. You know, the world's coming to an end. The year 2000? Y2K? Now it's Y212, 11, or what? The whole thing is just to put people in fear and anxiety. You know, don't take another step, don't take another breath. Everything's coming to an end anyhow. But it hasn't come to an end. In any case, this body, whether the world ends at 2012 or whatever else, but this body that we're in is going to end very shortly. That's the real Y2K. So if you want to be in anxiety about something, be in anxiety about something that's real. That's really going to happen. We're going to die. Don't tell anyone that. You'll become unpopular. Imagine you go out and you make an announcement. You know, Y2K didn't happen. 2012 is not going to happen. But you're going to die. No! Even if none of these things happen, even if, you know, Indra comes and brings you to the heavenly planets during all the destruction that goes on, you're going to die there anyhow. So in the meantime, chant Hare Krishna. That was Prabhupada's. When Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and he said, he had heard from an astrologer, actually, that this whole civilization, which is meant to keep people in darkness, will soon come to an end during the next war. That war is coming very, very soon. And everyone goes, because they, you know, Prabhupada, whatever he said must be true. So, and at least in that sense. So everyone was like, and then Prabhupada said, it's when Russia is going to, you know, attack, or Pakistan is going to attack India, Russia is going to join with India, America with Pakistan, and they're already making plans, etc., etc. And everyone goes, what should we do, Prabhupada? What should we do? And then Prabhupada's response was, well, you're going to die anyhow, chant Hare Krishna. It's not that, you know, you're going to live for another 20 years. If I could only live for another 20 years, everything would be perfect. No, you're going to die today or tomorrow. So in the meantime, chant Hare Krishna. That's the best way of preparing. Of course, then they gave other suggestions like creating farm communities and things like that. So when the war goes on, we'll have something to eat, because that's usually the problem when there's wars going on. So if you're really concerned and anxiety, if we really, you know, put the pitch of anxiety up, you know, we're going to die, what's going to happen, the war is coming, then move out to a farm, grow some food, because that's really going to be the problem, material problem, if there is some catastrophe, if do we get something to eat. Not that, oh, there's no more iPods, what am I going to do? The internet doesn't work. Oh, my God. That's not our real worry. It's, am I going to eat something? So if you're really anxiety, then do something about that. Other than that, just chant Hare Krishna. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.